Genoa.
This is YouTube.
This is If Like Entertainment.
Yeah, Throwback Thursday. Weird for January. Freak January.
Yeah, we're doing movies that are sort of out there. And this is our first review with our new president, Biden.
Yeah. Whoop, whoop. Yes, we welcome him with open arms to the White House. We only hope that this will be a springboard to the reversal of a lot of policies that wasn't in favor of the American people. That's one.
And because of that, it felt like a good time to do a movie that dives into like a dystopian world and follow the statistic gang leader who's been imprisoned and volunteers for to be a guinea pig as a conduct aversion experiment, but things don't go as planned. And we are talking about the 1972 classic A Clockwork Orange by Stanley Kubrick.
Kubrick, yes, the man.
Is this the first movie we've done of his?
Yes, yes. Because we never, I think around Halloween, we were always talking about The Shining, but I don't think we ever did it.
Yeah, I think I usually vote down The Shining because there's so much stuff out there that's already been done on it. Okay. I mean, there's an entire movie about the color red in the movie Shining. So
yeah, a lot of documentaries on The Shining. Yeah. So that this is our first Kubrick film. All right.
So this came out February 2nd, 1972, a couple years before I was born, a little longer before you were born. So what was happening?
When we wasn't born? Yeah. What people were watching on that 4x3, there definitely was a 16x9 back then.
Square little TVs. No remotes.
No remotes.
You had to get up to turn the channel. You were... maybe had 13 channels if you were lucky.
Yeah. Back in the day, you had to work for your television viewing. Mm-hmm. The antennas, all that. Yeah. Okay, so number five was ABC Movie of the Week, but it doesn't say which movie of the week. But
okay.
ABC was to have movies of the week. Number four, we were still into Western, so Gunsmoke was holding down number four. Marcus Webley MD. I don't know about that one. Sure. The Flip Wilson Show. Yes. My father's favorite. Flip Wilson. Awesome black comedian, even more of an awesome stand-up show. And number one, of course, we were...
Was it MASH?
No. We were hanging out with Archie Bunker and the gang. The family, baby. Yes. Okay.
I only recognize Gunsmoke and Archie Bunker in the gang. So
okay.
I didn't recognize the other ones, but
yeah. I guess it was some solid TV, at the time. Now I didn't look this song up. It's called Knock Three Times.
Yeah, of course. I was listening to the 70s station today and that song came on.
What's the chorus? I know it's Knock Three Times, but
it's Knock Three Times. It's like she's having an affair with the person living below her. And so it's like knock three times with a broom when it's clear to come down. I'll post
it. Okay, post. Cool. Good. All right. Yeah. I mean, the title of the song sounds familiar, but I was like, I don't remember this song about three times. So that was what people were jamming to. That's what people had on the A-tracks was the...
it was by the band. band called Dawn.
Dawn, yeah. Yeah, so people were jamming to some Infidelity on the 8-tracks.
I mean, I feel, you know, I want to say like the Pill song maybe came out that year, or I Am Woman came out that year, which is also about, has some bit about abortion in that song. Mm. So yeah, a little bit of women's liberation, taking control of shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
And in the middle of all of that, Clockwork Orange was released.
That's a count.
This was based on a movie, this is based on a book, mm-hmm. By the same name. And the book originally was released in the UK in 62. And then it was released in the US also in 62 as a hardback. So the movie or the book had been out published for about 10 years before it was made into a movie. And fun fact about the UK versus US version of the book, the UK version originally had 13 chapters. And when they were going to release it in the US, so the last chapter in the book, it's like a redemption story. He gets married, he has kids, and he's like a good person. They didn't think that that would resonate with U.S. audiences, so they cut that chapter out of the U.S. book.
Wow.
And when they were making the movie, Stanley wasn't aware that there was a final chapter. And so he wrote the screenplay based on the U.S. version of the book. And when he was told that there was a final chapter and he saw what it was, he was like, American audiences won't go for this. It's not realistic.
Yeah, no. So. Not in this world that the author has, you know, built.
No.
Yeah. So this movie stars... is it Malcolm McDowell?
Yep, Malcolm McDowell.
I mean, he's pretty much your lead. He plays Alex, and we follow the story through him. We hear the internal thoughts via voiceover and numerous scenes. He kind of just giving us kind of a layout of, you know, the night with the boys and what they usually do, and, you know, like what he holds dear and far as his activities, him and his crew.
And so Malcolm plays, the character's name is Alex. And in the book, Alex is supposed to be a 15-year-old. Malcolm was almost 30 years old when he filmed this movie. So the movie is still being portrayed as if he is a teenager, but you have a 30-year-old playing it. So for me, it kept throwing me off. Mm-hmm, yeah. Because I had seen the Broadway play before I had seen the movie, and the Broadway play had all these young kids playing the main characters, and they look like 15-year-olds. Malcolm doesn't look like a 15-year-old in this movie.
No, actually, he was 27 to be specific. But yeah, you're close. Well, yeah, no, yeah. I always thought, like, yeah, when you watch it, yeah, you have no idea of the references of the book, things like that. I thought he was in like college or something. He was like,
right. Except the fact there's a scene. So the movie happens in three parts. The first part is Alex and his gang go around doing horrible things, and they beat up a homeless person. Then they get in a fight with another gang. They steal a car and go on a driving spree. And then they come into a house, rape a woman, beat up her husband. Then Alex goes home. And this is where like it gets confusing in the movie, because he goes home and he's living with his parents, and they're like, it's time for you to go to school. But he goes, I have an upset stomach. So that scene was confusing to me, because if he was in college, why are they bugging him about going to school? And then why is the headmaster coming to the house asking him why you're not in school?
Mm-hmm.
if it was college. Yeah. So that's why I went to go look up how old he was supposed to be. And I was like, he's not 15.
Yeah. Well, clearly, Kubrick wanted, you know, McDowell. Even though it was rumblings within the casting that Mick Jagger was on board.
What? No, that would have been a horrible casting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just imagine Mick Jagger, his tall, lanky self. Well, at least him like dancing around the place would be very amusing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But Malcolm McDowell, he does a very nice job of capturing Alex's cold eyes, where he's just sort of staring at characters and at people, and you're like, yes, that character could definitely do some evil.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Kubrick being a master filmmaker he is, you know, the movie just opens up with a tight shot on, you know, Alex staring into the camera, like pretty much just looking at us with those like cold, like steely blue eyes. And then Kubrick, his signature camera style is usually he starts off with an image close up, and it slowly pans out to where you see where the subject is, what's around the subject, stuff like that. Like he did a lot of that in Barry Lyndon, Eyes Wide Shut, stuff like that. But this one definitely serves. It's a compliment to his style, because, you know, it just starts off with him, and then as it slowly pans out, we see him and his boys. He's near him, just kind of chilling, and then we seeing the bar, the environment, these interesting tables that's like naked women, like mannequin type women, like tables. And then, you know, people's kind of just sitting looking almost like in a haze, almost. Everyone's a little lifeless in this milk bar.
That's the milk bar, but yeah. They're not just serving milk. You can get whatever drug of choice added to your milk. So I'm sure people are a little, either tripping or.
Yeah. LSD milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not specific, and it don't go into a specific year, but we just know that it's this, you know, future. No, it's not the present. And it's a lawless, you know, future.
Right. So to speak. It's sort of a dystopian world. Where it was funny. So one of the last crimes that Alex and his gang. So Alex and his gang, they're sort of, they think Alex is turning on them, and he convinces them that he's not. And they go out and commit another crime. But while they're there, Alex kills the woman, the cat lady, and they break into her house and rape her, or try to rape her. But he kills her in the process. And so while the cops are on their way, his friends knock him out. And so he gets caught by the cops. Mm-hmm. And that's where we start the second act of the movie. And while he was in prison, I can't remember if it was the doctor or like the head of the prison, but he looked like Prince Charles. Did you notice that?
Yeah. It did look like, I mean, I'm pretty sure it wasn't, but yeah. Like spitting image.
Right. So it was because this is like a British dystopian film. I was like, is he mocking Prince Charles? But Prince Charles would have been really young at that time and didn't look that way. So he was projecting how Prince Charles would look when he's older. I don't know.
Possibly. It could have been. You know, who knows? I mean, unless Kubrick, you know, had it somewhere in some kind of notes of, you know, the look of character, said, hey, I wanted the Prince Charles looking dude with this character, then we would never know.
That's true.
Yeah.
So he's in jail, and he gets sentenced to 15 years. And I think in his second year, the Prince Charles looking character, whether it's the head of the prison or the scientist that has created this conversion therapy, comes to him and offers a deal that if he agrees to go through the therapy and it's successful, then he can leave prison. And the therapy is he is shown violent images and given drugs that make him throw up so that he starts to associate vomiting and feeling like crap with violence.
Right.
And he goes through that therapy and it works.
Oh, and also another thing that connects his bliss with violence, it's kind of like all the things that culminates into like the singular, I guess, sound is Beethoven, right? That's kind of like his, he gets off, like he coincides that music with sex and violence.
Right. And so they use that music as part of the conversion therapy so that when he hears the music, he also feels like crap.
Right. Where in the beginning, you know, when he hears it, he gets off almost while he go out and do, you know, crazy stuff. But now he's like revolted by the sound of Beethoven. Like, so that's the conversion therapy.
Right. So he gets out of prison and now we start the third act of the movie.
Oh, hold on. Okay. So explain, well, the one or two people who had ever seen this movie, what was the process like of how they made him look at the images?
Right. They like hold open his eyes, the contraption, and put eye drops in there, and so project visuals up on a screen.
Yep.
But it's like a claw type thing that holds the eye open.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now the reason why we're rewinding this back because there's a fun fact about that. So while filming the rehabilitation scene, Kubrick insisted that Alex need to be sitting in an upright position. Lid locks, that's him. The lid locks he was wearing were not intended to be used while the patient sits upright. And as a result, McDowell actually sliced his cornea during shooting that scene.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah. Yeah. They're talking about dedication for a role.
Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah. So yeah, I just wanted to like throw that tidbit in for that scene since we're on that rehabilitation scene. So, anyway, so now in the third act, he's out. He's seen the world has changed a little bit, and
yeah, and he goes home to be with his parents to, you know, because he's like a 17-year-old high school kid. You should be living with your parents. And when he gets there, they've rented out his room because they thought he was going to be in jail for 15 years. Right. And so now he has no place to live. He goes and goes to find a place on the street to sleep. But he runs into the homeless guy that we met in the first scene that him and his gang beat up. The cops come, and the cops that are called are actually part of the two people that were part of the rival gang that he had beat up in the first scene. So like basically the third scene is karma for all the bad shit that he did in the first scene is all coming back to hurt him in the final bits of the movie.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Karma third act. Yeah. So they kind of beat the crap out of him. You know, they damn near drown him and kind of leave him out for dead, so to speak.
Right. And he crawls himself to a house, and the couple that he beat up in the first act, the wife died, but the husband lived, and now he has a trainer living with him, and they bring him in. But ultimately, like, he just keeps getting the shit beat out of him, all these different situations. And what happens is all the violence acted on him breaks the conversion therapy, and he then becomes violent.
Exactly. And he's like, he's back. Now, will you go? So when you mention the fellow that Alex and his crew beat up, he's in a wheelchair now. And he, you know, seeks the help of the bodybuilder. I did not notice. I'm sure like people are like, duh, how do you not know this? You're supposed to know movies. All right. You know who that the tall guy in this muscular bodybuilder in the tight shorts? You know who he was?
Is that Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No.
No, I didn't notice who it was.
He's David Prowse.
Should I know who that is?
You better. He's Darth Vader. Yeah, you know, he's the physical Darth Vader in the suit. He's the tall. Right. I had no idea that was David Prowse. Yeah, so Darth Vader was in Clockwork Orange. How about that? That's funny. Yeah, so yeah, just tidbits all around in this movie that I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's,
he was a big man.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, Darth Vader was a tall dude. He was a big, tall guy.
Yeah,
and also the theatrical release of Clockwork Orange was the first film to employ Dolby sound. It was also one of the first movies to use radio mics to record sound. This important development eliminated the call for post syncing. So, you know, this movie was, you know, revolutionizing some stuff, you know, and behind the scenes and post production and sound and sound mixing and all that stuff. So,
wow. Mm-hmm. So the movie, although it came out in 73 and sort of takes place in what feels like would be the UK, the film was not available for public viewing in the UK until 2000 after Stanley Kubrick's death.
Wow.
That's which crazy. Is kind of crazy.
Man. So is this the first movie? Was this a movie to get an X? This movie got an X, right?
Did it? Is it because of the orgy scene?
Yeah, I think that, and yeah, probably like the rapes, attempted rape scenes, whatever. But the thing, oh, speaking of that, well, like it was like the threesome scene, whatever. So Kubrick, here's the thing, right? Okay. So it says, in an effort to sidestep censors, Kubrick deliberately blurred the sex scene between Alex and two women from the record store. In fact, the fast motion scene took 28 minutes to shoot. The scene ended up contributing to the film's X rating anyway, because censors feared the technique would be picked up by pornographers looking for a loophole to get their film passed by the ratings board.
So it was the orgy scene.
It was so fast. It was like, you know, it's really, I mean, you kind of got the gist of what they were doing, but it was so, I don't know. It was so, okay. If Looney Tunes did a porno, it would be that scene. It would be very like Tex Avery-ish. Like,
yes. And McDowell, he liked filming that scene because Stanley couldn't yell cut while they were filming it. And so he could do whatever he wanted for the entire 28 minutes that it was being filmed.
Hey, you know, yeah, you gotta be about the scene, you know, yeah. It's all about the performance. Ooh, hilarious. With this particular film, you know, it definitely, you know, plays with, well, you know, it brings up all these different, you know, societal questions of, you know, conformity and, you know, adjusting to society and, you know,
also brings up whether or not someone's born or raised to be evil, because even after the conversion therapy, he has evil done to him and he becomes evil.
Yeah, like is it the whole nature versus nurture situation or
right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in its own cynical, almost comedic way, yeah, it was touching upon those particular, you know, themes. But what was very unique about, so I didn't read the book. I mean, I definitely, you know, watched the movie a lot, is how they don't, the film or the story do not make Alex a redeeming character. Like he is who he is. It's kind of almost a suspense, so to speak, of you know, when he changed, that you would think, okay, well, maybe he just needed that, you know, maybe he just kind of, you know, was just influenced, wrongly influenced, like the bad influences, right? The bad influence says made him do that. But then that whole wool pulled over you, that last scene, he's like, oh, okay, I'm back. Like, my nature is to be this person.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, I can make the same argument that maybe his nature wasn't to be that person. And by being shown, like, by breaking him of his nature, and then he got bad nurturing by being beat up and violated in the third scene, that then made him a violent person again. So I feel like you could use this movie for both arguments.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's very unique about this particular film. I mean, for people who like dive into the movie that, you know, in that way, you know, if it's more of like a wider context of society, like a societal issue, you know, more so than, you know, are we just focusing on these just rambunctious young people just doing stuff? But it's so much more than that, you know, for people who really want to like analyze the movie as a whole, you know, in layers, you know, like, you know, the whole thing that, you know, we just talked about, you know, so.
Yeah. So this movie is actually rated number 2 of the 25 most controversial movies of all times by Entertainment Weekly.
Is Straw Dogs number 1?
I don't know what number 1 is.
Gotcha.
And then it is rated number 70 of the greatest movie of all times by the American Film Institute. And rated number 4 out of 10 by the American Film Institute's sci-fi list. So,
well, it was a dystopian future, so let's be, so I guess you can slot that into sci-fi, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think what this movie, like a lot of people that haven't seen this movie know of this movie because of the costumes and like the set design. The costumes in the movie are very distinct. The makeup that Alex wears with the eyelash under one eye and the white jumpsuits and the cod piece. It's very distinct looking, and that even if you've never seen the movie, you recognize the outfit immediately.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely pop culture influence visually. You know, you'll see it somewhere. You'll see someone borrowing that look. It's some way, shape, or form in another, like TV, like show, movie, whatever, music video. Yeah. I think Usher did a video where it was kind of like the same setup. Like him and his gang was kind of dressed sort of like Alex gang, you know, and they're like in the middle of like an alley or something. It was something like that. The other day I can really remember, like, oh yeah, I remember someone's been watching Clockwork.
Even though this film feels very 70s because of all the set pieces, all the art and everything in the film, it does feel like it could be in a different universe completely. Mm-hmm. It does feel dystopian and weird.
Yeah. Yeah. From costumes, from the car, the, yeah.
Yeah.
It, yeah. It's, You know what? It could be like if the UK, if this is the same kind of parallel universe, like in the United States, the Mad Max world is happening. And in the UK, the Clockwork Orange world is going on at the same time. Like, I could totally see that. Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. Yes.
Yeah. It's like if you fly to the United States, yeah, the Mad Max world is going on. Fly to the UK, the Clockwork Orange stuff is going on. I could definitely see that. Yeah. So it's our review, or our rating scale goes as follows. Sit down on the couch, you know, get a nice little cocktail and enjoy the ride, so to speak. Put your shoes on, contemplating going outside. You know what's out there, which isn't good. You contemplate going out there anyway. Or the worst is going out and embracing COVID. Or open mask. I mean, no mask wearing people and all the other bad stuff that's outside right now.
So what's rating for you?
Yeah, I give it a sit down. Because you know what? When I watched it again, it's just something about Kubrick. To me, he's like the snake charmer for me. It's like whatever story he takes on, like visually, it's always mesmerizing. Some way it's always captivating, like how he compose shots, with how he do steady cams, how he push into a scene, out of scene, how he just make a scene play out. I mean, the whole thing when Alex registering, you know, to go to prison. I mean, it's just him just going, registering, go to prison. You know, he just yelling out his number, he taking off his shirt, he's spreading his cheeks. I mean, it's a long scene. It's not much happening. It's just him just, you know, registering. But it's engaging, you know, for some reason. It's such a minor scene. And you have a knack of doing that. Well, like I said, me being, you know, a sucker for, you know, filmmakers kind of doing great things with the medium. I give it a sit down. I mean, is it in my top five of Kubrick movies? No. But it's definitely, it's definitely in my wheelhouse of, you know, unique Kubrick films that, you know, you have to at least watch once.
So I'm sort of in between putting my shoes on and sitting on the sofa. Okay. It is like the film, it feels like an art house film. And I mentioned that I did see A Clockwork off Broadway as a play, and the play moved very quickly, and like the pacing of the play, seeing it in real life, was very fast. Whereas I feel like Kubrick's movie, he draws out things because he likes to put a lot into a scene.
Yeah.
All the things that you like starting really close and zooming out, but that adds so much time to the story that starts to feel more like an art piece. Mm-hmm. And that it's like him doing things to make him happy versus keeping the pacing of the movie fast. And I feel like the first act of the movie with all the violence happening, there's so much stuff on there drawn out where I feel like he could have moved it a little bit faster and made it more violent.
you wanted a double X. Huh? I can see that. I agree.
You know, I think everyone should watch the movie. Especially if you're going into like media or want to do filmmaking, because it is a nice film to explore how a storyteller sets up visuals and sets up scenes and positions characters in a room to show like who is together and who's against, mm-hmm. and yeah. and the lighting and his use of colors and everything. You know, he's a master at all of that. But I did want the movie to move faster.
No, I totally agreed. I mean, I think it was like 2 hours and maybe 14 minutes or something like that. The movie. I definitely agree with that. Yes. I think he did 2001 before this one.
Yeah, he did that before this.
Okay. Yeah. So I think he was still in that mode.
Which is another like very slow, quiet, drawn out movie.
Yeah, except this one, he just added, you know, sex and violence in it. Yeah. So yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed. I'll tell you, I agree on all fronts. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, it's just something about him, his way of filmmaking that I'm just like, okay, I have to sit down on that one, because I always just have like a mental pen and paper and like, damn, like how did he light that, or how do you pull off that Steadicam scene? You know, but yeah, guys, if you haven't seen it, at least see it once.
it's not a family friendly movie, so don't take the family to watch it.
No,
this is after you've put the kids to bed,
right? Exactly. Yeah, it pretty much have your family steer clear of anything Stanley Kubrick. Well, yeah, yes. Anything Stanley Kubrick is not for family. Well, 2001 is. I take that back. That's the only movie that's for, well, Dr. Strangelove. Yeah, y'all can watch that. Spartacus. Yeah, you can watch that too. Okay. So anything after 2001, yeah, don't take the kids. That's not good.
There you go.
Yeah. Cool, guys. So thanks for listening to our rant on A Clockwork Orange. We'll be back next week with some more crazy, freaky January movie-ish. Well, until next week, we wish everyone safe physical distancing. And
wear a fucking mask.
Yeah, please. Peace.
Again. I'm singing and dancing in